Okay, we're going to get back to preparing your kids for the real world. We're going to have one more installment of this next Sunday, and then, Lord willing, we're going to be done for. Oh, somebody's clapping their hands. Can you imagine that? We're going to be done for a long time, probably. So we're still looking at intellectual development, and I'm really getting into some of the practical stuff at this point. So this sermon and next sermon are going to be much more practical stuff, just me giving you my observations and things and some recommendations that I've learned from other people over the years. But I'm not going to have a ton of Bible scripture in these sections, but I will have some. So we're going to look at intellectual development today a little bit next Sunday, and then we'll get into social development next Sunday, and then I'm going to end it with learning when it's time to kick your kids out of the house and get rid of them. So that's another important part of parenting as well, because some of them like to stick around forever. So you gotta take them up to the edge of the nest and give them the boot sometime. So, hint, hint, wink, wink, right, Chris? But yeah. Anyway. So, if you have an outline, we're down to page 29, down at the very bottom, talking about how a child's education should start very young. And if you look at Isaiah 28 and verse 9, this is not specifically referring to child's education, but just the principle that you can start instructing and teaching when you wean a child. That's when the Lord says that He can teach His doctrine, when somebody's weaned from the milk and drawn from the breast. In Isaiah 28 and verse 9, it says, "Whom shall He teach knowledge, and whom shall He make to understand doctrine? Them that are weaned from the milk and drawn from the breasts." So this is more of a spiritual thing where Paul says he tells the Hebrews that they weren't ready for strong meat. They should be ready for it. He tells the Corinthians the same thing, but they were still in need of milk. And the way in which to when somebody's ready to be taught is whenever they've been weaned off the milk, they've learned the very basics, and then you can go on unto perfection and teach more difficult things. But anyway, the point that I wanted to get just from that verse is that you can start instructing people very early. When a child is weaned, he's, what, a couple of years, a year or two, something like that. He's not very old. So the things of God should be among a child's first concepts and first words. And that could even start before birth, really, because you could start teaching your children. I'll get to this point in just a second. If you are reading the Bible out loud as a family or out loud personally, children hear things in the womb, and I've been told they can even respond to things that they hear in the womb. And so I think it would be a good idea, not that they're going to understand per se, of course, but they are going to be accustomed anyway to hearing Bible read, to hearing God's words from the very time before they're even born. If you think about it, children learn three ways. They learn, first of all, by imitation. They see you do things, and they imitate what you do, and then they hear you speak words. And then they start to learn those words and they pick up those words. And it's fascinating how God has designed the human brain. It certainly seems to have been designed to learn languages and to have that ability innately. Because little kids, when they're what, 1, 2 years old, they learn a language, one of the most complex things on the planet, and they learn the whole thing without any instruction. Nobody's sitting down and teaching them anything. They just learn it by hearing it. And that's fascinating, because how many kids do you know that just learn calculus or physics just by standing around hearing people talk about, derivatives and integrals or something? Nobody learns calculus that way. Nobody learns science that way. Nobody learns hardly anything that way. But language, one of the most complex things ever, children just learn, because it's almost like God has pre-made their brains to be able to do that, to be able to assimilate information without even having been taught it, just simply by hearing it. So they first of all learn by imitation, then they learn orally. So once they have some reason, then you can talk to them and use the language that they've picked up on their own, and then you can teach them things orally, and then they finally learn by reading, right? And that's the order in which children learn. So that being the case, it's really important to teach your kids how to read, and I'll get to that in just a moment. But back to the imitation thing, you want to be careful what you say around them, because they're going to pick up everything, right? They're like little sponges, and they're going to learn everything that you say or do, both good and bad. And as I don't need to tell any parent in here, kids pick up and learn more than you think, don't they? and even people that aren't parents, like me, how many times, I'm sure every one of us, has heard a little kid say something and we think, how did he learn that? How did he figure that out? And it's just, sometimes we're just amazed at what they learn. Well, they picked it up from somebody. And then on the other hand, you see a parent who is red in the face and ashamed whenever their kid said some horrible thing, and they think, where did he learn that from? I can tell you where he learned it from you at home. That's where he learned it from, and you're embarrassed now. So you want to be careful what you say and do around them. Or he learned it from somebody at school and you haven't been paying attention and correcting things that he's been learning, one of the two. So your example and your godly living and religion will teach them far more than your words will. Teaching and instructing is good, but the example, as I've mentioned this numerous times in this series, the example is the most important thing. So parents should take a direct part in their child's education. And this goes, it doesn't matter whether what method of education you choose, it's still the parents' responsibility and duty to take a direct part in that. Of course, this would first of all include teaching them the scriptures. This is definitely the parents' duty, and this is nobody else's duty. You can delegate, I just thought of this, you can delegate their secular education to another institution or to another person, but as a parent, you cannot delegate their learning the scriptures to somebody else. Now, they learn it in church, they learn it from the pastor, and they should, but you also ought to be teaching them at home, and you can't say, well, you know, I'll just give them to the Sunday school teacher or I'll give them to somebody else so they can learn spiritual things. That is your responsibility. Ephesians 6:4 tells us that, which we'll get to in just a minute. But like I said, this should begin at birth or even before by reading the scriptures together as a family with your children. And if the only exposure to the Bible that your kids get is in church, then you have failed in your parenting responsibility to train up your children. You've failed in your duty before God, because if the only time they hear the Bible read is for this hour or so where they hear it in church, you have failed, because they are not going to learn what they need to know just from 1 hour a week here in church, right? They need to hear it daily. It would be like if we had a potluck after lunch every Sunday after church, and you thought, well, as long as I take my kid to church and feed him once a week, he'll be okay, right? And I don't have to feed him throughout the week, right? Of course, nobody would think that, right? Jesus said, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God shall man live. So you wouldn't only feed your kid once a week, so you certainly don't want to feed him spiritually only once a week. Now, taking a direct part in your children's education should include teaching them by your example, as I've said. And bear in mind, you will teach by example. Just make sure it's a good one, right? Every single person, no matter how good or how bad the parent is, they all teach their children. Even if they never tell them anything, their example is teaching their children something. So you want to make sure that the example is a good one. And I'll tell you another frightening thing. I was thinking about this morning. You have back there in the Old Testament where God says that he would repay judgment for the sins of the fathers to the third and fourth generation. Now, if you understand, in the other places in the Bible that the Lord says, you know, every man is going to die for his own sin. The child is not going to die for the father's sins, right? So God is not saying back there in the Old Testament that if the father commits adultery, all the children are going to be killed, right? Obviously not. But think about this. What if the father is a philanderer and he's running around on the children's mother or something? What if he is a fornicator? What if he's a drunk? What if he's a drug addict? What if he's got a horrible temper at home? What if he's stealing things? You know, what if he's doing all these, you name the sin, right? What's going to happen? The children are going to pick up those things and they're going to learn those bad examples, and the father's going to be judged for them and the kids are going to be judged for them because they picked up the things. And those things can be generational. That's why it's so important to train up your kids, because it gets passed down to them and then they pass it down to the next ones. And a lot of times that's how, like, horrible child molesting situations, that stuff is generational. And it is a proven fact that when it happens to one person, it's not a guarantee or anything, but a lot of times, let me put it this way, when a person molests a child, there's a high likelihood that they themselves were molested. I don't know if it's a 100% thing, but there's a high likelihood for that. So anyway, you want to be really careful with the example that you set. Now, taking a direct part in your children's education would also include early education, like teaching them things like proper grammar and how to read, which is the most important skill I would say that you can teach them, how to count, do basic math, things like that. So that should be a direct part that parents should play. You certainly don't want to wait till you send them off to kindergarten to teach them how to read. If you can, you know, sit down and even if you are going to send them to school, send them there, get them a leg up, and help them learn how to read. Because once you know how to read, the world is opened up to you, and you can learn pretty much anything if you know how to read. So that's why I think, personally, even though I'm a math guy, an engineer guy, and that kind of thing, I still think reading is far more important. If you had to only have time to teach your kids one thing and to impress upon them the importance of one thing, reading would far outweigh, in my opinion, math, science, any of the rest of that stuff. Because they can learn the math and the science and everything else if you just teach them to read. You teach them math, they're not going to learn. They're not going to be able to learn other stuff. Maybe they could learn some science, but there's going to be a lot of things that are out of their reach if they don't know the basics of how to read. And of course, taking a direct part in your children's education can be doing it all, right? It can be fully educating your children by homeschooling them. It's not a requirement. You don't have to do that, but you have the prerogative to do that. So I want to talk now about formal education, and I'm speaking of mainly elementary and high school. I'll get to the college thing next Sunday, Lord willing. But I want to talk about the children's formal education, basically from K through 12. As I mentioned the other day, you have, as parents, been given the right to homeschool your children and to provide for their entire education if you so choose. If you look in Ephesians 6 and verse 4, I'll just go back to this verse and show you right here, this is your verse. If you choose to homeschool and anybody ever gives you any grief about it, right here, you can just take them to this one verse and you can say, here it is. This is God giving me the authority to educate my children. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And I'm not going to define the terms again as I did last week, but nurture and admonition, both of those things include education, right? And to train, also train up a child in the way you should go. That also is defined by education. So this is an authority given to you right here by God that if you want to, you don't have to send your kids anywhere else. You can choose to send them somewhere else, and that's also your prerogative, and I'll get into that. And it's not unbiblical to send your kid to another school to be educated. There's nothing wrong with that per se. It depends. I mean, there could be such a school that was such a bad situation that you might not want to do it, right? But sending them to another school there's nothing wrong with that necessarily. Now, this can include, of course, homeschooling, and I'm going to get into homeschooling here in just a minute. Depending on your situation, though, which would include your finances, your ability, you basically have three choices, I think. Maybe there's more, but I'm aware of three of educating your kids. You could homeschool them, you could send them to a private school, or you could send them to a government school, to public education. You could do any one of those three things. And I'm going to talk about all three of those things and show you some of the pros and cons of them. So let's first of all look at homeschooling. Now, just as a disclaimer, homeschooling may not be for everybody. And it's a lot of work. It's very difficult. Obviously, if you're a single parent, it's nigh unto impossible. I guess maybe there are people that somehow do it when your kids are a little older or something. I've heard of people that do it, but it would be pretty difficult, I would think. So there are definitely situations where it would be very difficult to do. So I am going to be advocating for homeschooling, but and it was my personal thing where I personally think it's probably the best for your kids, but I am not in any way saying that you have to homeschool or that you're wrong for not homeschooling. So please don't misunderstand me. It may not be for everybody. Now, some advantages to it. It's a good way to limit the indoctrination your children will receive in public or private schools, for that matter, because they are going to be indoctrinated. Those facilities, especially public schools, they exist, I'm convinced, for one main reason, and that is to train up your children in the way that the state wants them to go, not in the way that God wants them to go. There is a reason why the state provides free education, right? Why does the state provide anything for free, right? Are they just benevolent, wise public servants and they have our best interests at heart? No, they have a reason. Why do they provide free welfare to people? Well, they want votes, right? Why are they want people to depend on the government, right? Why do they provide any number of free things that they do, right? They want to have control over you. That's why they do it. So just keep that in mind. Homeschooling is also a good way to limit the amount of sinful garbage your children will be taught in school or pick up from their friends. So there's not only the indoctrination thing where they're going to learn that the government is the solution to all problems and so on. They don't need a God and there is no God and evolution explains how we got here. They're going to learn that kind of stuff. But they're also just going to learn a lot of sinful, horrible things, bad habits and just outright immoral things. And I'll get into some of those a little bit later. So this is a good way to limit that. Because if you send your kids 7 or 8 hours or however long it is, 5 days a week to a place to be barraged by teachers that are telling them lies and promoting all this gender equality and transgender stuff and pro-sodomy, pro-gay marriage, pro-abortion, all the horrible things that we all hate, right? If they're there being taught that by the teachers, and then the students who have bad parents at home, who are not teaching them anything at home, and the students are teaching your children their bad example, it's going to be pretty hard, right, to undo all that stuff. So homeschooling is a way to protect your kids from all that stuff. So that's another advantage to it. Now, some people would say, but I don't want to shelter my kids. I don't think it's a good idea to shelter my kids and so that they don't know what the real world's like. Well, let me tell you what. It's a good idea to shelter your young children. The older they get, the less sheltering they need. But when your children are young, they need sheltered. I would say you would be crazy to not shelter them. You think about it. I mean, just take it to the extreme. Are you going to take them down to the red light district? I don't know if there is one in Minneapolis. Are you going to take them down to the red light district? And just so they're exposed, you know, I want little 4-year-old Johnny, I want him to see what's really out there. Are you going to take him down there? Right? You're going to take him to the corner and let him see how the heroin addicts are tripped out on, out of their minds or something? No, of course you wouldn't do that. Why would you? It's crazy. Sheltering's good when they're young. And here's the thing. You say, but they're not going to know about any of the evil that's out there. If I homeschool them, I keep them at home, and all I do is just teach them the Bible, they're not going to know about all that wicked stuff out there. Yes, they are. And here's how you teach them about it. You teach them it by the scriptures. You realize that the scriptures tell us about all the evil stuff that's out there. Think about all the things that are taught to us in the scriptures. They will learn about fornication. They'll learn about adultery. They'll learn about witchcraft. They'll learn about drunkenness, blasphemy, murder, rape, incest. They're going to learn about all that wicked stuff from the Bible, right? But they're going to learn about that stuff is evil. And then when you read them about those things, and if you're reading them through the Bible and you're teaching them everything, you're going to come to those things. Now, guess what? When they're 4 or 5 years old and they hear words like fornication or things like that, they're not going to know what it means. And they're probably not even going to think to ask what it means, right? So do they need to know what that is at that age? No. They don't need to know about that, do they? Because they don't even, that's not even coming into their mind, right? But when they get a little older and they say, Daddy, what is fornication? Oh, now it's time to explain it to them. And you can tell them what it is, right? And so now they're learning about it from the Bible, from what God says about it. And they don't need to go out there and personally experience it or see it. They know about it. Eventually, they'll be out in the world and they will see it and they will run into that kind of stuff. And then they'll already know about it, right? That's the way you do it. That's the way to do it. Said another way, they should learn about them from God's word before they're exposed to them in the world, and then they'll know how to deal with them correctly. So I would not worry about sheltering your kids. As long as you're teaching them the scriptures and you don't shy away from the uncomfortable parts of scriptures, you just teach them everything in the Bible, then you'll be just fine, and they will too. Homeschooling is a good way to limit the amount of control and influence that the government has over you and your children. I think if you're one of these types that wants to resist the encroaches of government and resist how the government isn't being so intrusive into our lives and taking more and more of our liberties away, the best thing that you can do? Homeschooling. There, I mean, that's the ultimate way. This is kind of a crude way of saying it, but the ultimate way to flip the finger, right, to the government. Because you take them out of their schools, you take them out of their indoctrination facilities, and then you can teach them what you believe to be the truth, and you have so limited the government's control and influence over them. That's a wonderful thing. I think if there's two things that the government would not have allowed to happen if they would have paid attention, and maybe I'm wrong, I might be definitely wrong about one of them, I don't think I am about the other one. I would say the internet. I don't think they would have let that one get off the ground. But then again, you could argue maybe they did, and maybe they're the ones that got it off the ground in the first place, and they were. DARPA was the one that invented it. But I don't know. I would think they'd be in a quandary, because do we invent this thing called the internet, or do we allow this thing to come about that's going to allow information to flow freely, and it's going to be harder for us to keep people in the dark? That's a bad thing. But do we go ahead and create it, because now we can control people, we can know everything about them, they're, you know, social media and everything? So I don't know. I think it would be a real a coin toss if they were to determine, if they could have saw or could have seen what would have happened, and then determine, should we let this thing get out or not? But homeschooling, I don't think, is that debatable. I think, and I could be wrong, but I think if the government could have seen homeschooling coming and realized how popular it would become, I think they would have squashed that thing in its infancy, and I don't think that they would have allowed it to happen. Because that right there is probably, you have done more to cripple the government than anything else if people are homeschooling their kids and taking them out of the system. Now, if you think I'm wrong, well, tell me about it, and I'd be happy to have a discussion about that and see what you think. Now, homeschooling has been shown to be superior to traditional schooling, and I have more on this later. I have some quotes for you from some different sources which show you that that the test scores are actually better from homeschooled kids than kids that go to public and even private schools, for that matter. And people would think that's amazing, because you have a teacher at home that's not even a teacher, right? The world would think, how could your kids possibly get a better education from a non-teacher than from an accredited teacher from one of the government institutions? Well, I got reasons for that. A couple of them are right now. One of the reasons is because of the student-teacher ratio and the personalized attention that affords. Because if you think about it, you go to a traditional school, especially a public school, I don't know, what's the teacher-to-student ratio? Probably 1 to 40? 1 to 24? Okay, and that's probably pretty good. I think some of them are even higher than that. So let's take that one, 1 to 24. One teacher per 24 students, right? It's pretty hard for one teacher to give 24 little people personalized instruction, right? It's pretty almost impossible, right? You can't do that. Now, in that, some of them are gonna learn okay on their own, and then maybe they can give the personalized instructions to the ones that need it, and that could work okay. But still, they're not gonna get what they could get if the ratio is lower. What is the teacher quote unquote student quote unquote ratio in a homeschooling environment? Oh, maybe 1 to 1, 1 to 2, 1 to 5, 1 to 7, probably at best or at worst. Most people don't have that many children. But, you know, typical family today, maybe 2-3 kids. So it's 1 to 3, right? 1 to 3, 1 to 24, well, you got a lot better odds of having your kid get the personalized attention and instruction that he needs. And it's harder for homeschooled children to be, quote, left behind, so to speak, right? 1 to 24, you got little Johnny, he's not doing so well, and the teacher, maybe Johnny's a tough case, and the teacher just doesn't have the time or just doesn't feel like putting in the time for little Johnny. And little Johnny just kind of goes off by the wayside, and little Johnny never really gets the education that he could have gotten if somebody would have really taken the time and the effort and put into little Johnny. But if little Johnny is in his mom's homeschool program and there's only two other students, guess what? Little Johnny's going to get the attention that little Johnny needs. And his mother is going to know what little Johnny needs, because she spent 5, 6, 10 years, whatever, with little Johnny, and she knows how little Johnny learns, and she's going to be able to give him a lot better education than a teacher could ever do. Now, homeschooling is a major task and commitment. I don't think anybody would dispute that. And of course, the majority of the responsibility is going to fall on mom, because dad is going to be away at work all day. So the majority of it is going to be left to the mother. Now, I do believe that the father should be the one that is setting the curriculum and making the major decisions, right? He's the legislative branch when it comes to education, and the mother's the executive branch. So she puts into effect whatever the dad determines the education should be. Now, if parents decide to go with a curriculum in which the parents teach children like a regular school teacher would, then that might mean that dad is going to have to help out around the house some, because there are different. All homeschool curriculums are not created equal, right? Some people do it more like a school environment where the mother is the teacher and they've got a chalkboard up there and the mother is teaching subjects all day long. And if that's what you want to do, fine and dandy. But wow, that's a lot of work. And from homeschool programs that I know of, that is unnecessary. You can do that if you want, but man, you are going to be in for a lot of work, because you're going to be teaching. I mean, say you got three kids in three different grades, and how many different subjects are they learning? I don't know. What do they learn? Four or five subjects or something? I don't know, at a time. So you got four or five subjects at three different grade levels, and you're going to teach all that stuff? Wow. I mean, you're going to have your hands full. I don't recommend that. There are better alternatives, in my opinion, which I'll give in a minute. But if that's what you're doing, then I would say the dad might want to step up and help out with some cooking and cleaning and things, because how much time are you going to have if you're being teacher mom all day long, like a regular teacher would? And for that matter, the dad might have to step it up and he'd do some teaching too in the evenings or something. But there is a better way. I'm going to get to that in just a second. Better way, in my opinion, anyway. I would say when mothers are homeschooling that husbands should not expect to have museum-quality homes, or that they should burden their wives with overly large homes that would require a lot of work to keep up. Now, I think a better alternative would be considering a self-taught curriculum like the Robinson curriculum or the Ron Paul curriculum, which are both excellent curricula and they require little to no direct teaching from parents. Now, this is just my personal recommendation, and this just happens to be the only two self-taught curricula that I know of. So I'm sure there's probably other self-taught curricula out there that are good, but these two I know about personally. I know a close family to me, close friends of mine that use the Robinson curriculum, and then I know another family through them that use it, and their children are, at least one of them now, are graduated from high school. And which is nice, because my friends then can see the end result of it, and it turned out really, really well. Because now this boy, or young man, is going off to college to engineering school, and he was homeschooled in a self-taught curriculum, the Robinson curriculum. It is, the theory behind it is that its focus is heavily on reading, the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic, right? And it's funny they call it three R's, and arithmetic starts with an A. But anyway, you know what they say. Anyway,
reckoning.
So
reckoning.
Is that what it?
Writing starts with W, so it's still broken.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah. The three R's, and only one of them starts with R. So go figure. Anyway, it deals with those three things, and it starts out with reading, and the kids learn to read, and they read and read and read. I think they read 3 hours a day or something like that, and then when they want to read personally for their own, you know, enjoyment, they can read more than that, but 3 hours a day they're reading, and they don't do, and then they do, they focus heavily on math. And I know the family that I know uses the don't tell me you guys use it too.
Saxton.
Tell me. Saxton, thank you. Saxton math, which a lot of people swear by. They say it's great. And so anyway, they do heavily on the math. And it does not, the kids don't even get into science until they're in their later high school years. Now, that goes against conventional wisdom. Conventional wisdom is, oh, you got to get them exposed to science really early in elementary school and early high school. And I would have at one time said that too, but I've heard the rationale, the Robinson curriculum, and I've experienced it myself, and I totally see it. It makes no sense, in my opinion, to teach your kids, especially higher level sciences, physics and chemistry and things like that, especially physics, makes no sense to teach them that if they don't have a solid foundation in math, if they basically haven't gone up through calculus or at least higher level algebra and trig. To teach them physics makes no sense, because you have to know all the math to do the physics. And if you don't, you end up dumbing down the physics because they don't understand the math. This happened to me myself. Went to college, I was taking calculus and physics in the same semester. And I was learning calculus in physics before I learned calculus. I was literally learning how to do derivatives and integrals in physics before we ever got to it in calculus. It was the stupidest thing ever. And then I get to calculus, I'm like, oh yeah, I learned how to do that in physics class. Totally backwards. That doesn't make any sense. That'd be like taking a, you know, taking a, an ancient literature class and learning how to read as you're reading the ancient literature, instead of learning how to read first and then taking the ancient literature class. It doesn't make any sense. So anyway, what the Robinson curriculum does is they get the kids, by the time they're maybe middle high school, I'm not sure exactly what the grade is, they've already gone through all the math. I don't know, maybe not calculus. I think they've even been exposed to calculus at that point. And they are expert in the math. And then in the last couple of years, they take the sciences, the hard sciences. It makes a lot of sense to me. So anyway, yeah, I think that's all I want to say about that. But you could check into that if you're so interested. And the Ron Paul curriculum, I'm familiar with it because I'm familiar with Ron Paul. And it from what I've heard and from other people and so on, it's a pretty good quality homeschooling curriculum as well. But there is a downside to that, which I'll get in and get into in just a minute. Now, self-taught curricula are less work than some of the other curricula for a homeschooling mother, but they still do require checking up on your kids to make sure that they're doing the work correctly. And I would think the Robinson curriculum is, this is true of it. I know it's true of the Ron Paul curriculum. For those curricula, you have to be a self-motivated student. If you have a kid that you just have to fight with to get him to do his work all the time, that those would not work, I don't think. And they'll tell you, the Ron Paul curriculum will tell you that. It won't work because the kids have to be self-motivated. And so anyway, I would think Robinson would be similar to that. And if your kids weren't self-motivated, then the mother would have to be getting in there and doing a lot more motivation to get them to go through their studies. But that would be the case with any curriculum if you don't have motivated children. Okay, now let's get to the objections to homeschooling. I realize this is more of a seminar than a sermon. I'm not giving you a lot of Bible, and I'm sorry for that. Hopefully I've given you enough, you know, in the rest of this series to make up for it. But let's get to some objections to homeschooling. Now, if you're considering homeschooling and maybe you have these objections in your own mind, this could be good. Or if you're already homeschooling, you're going to hear these objections from other people, and then you can answer them if you already haven't thought of these answers already. So objection number one, I'm not smart enough to homeschool my kids. Anybody ever thought that or heard that or said it yourself? I'm not smart enough to do this. I don't know what I'm doing. Well, I would say that nobody is more qualified to teach your children than you, right? Because who knows your kids better than you? And who cares about your kids more than you? Nobody. Nobody cares about your children's education more than you do. I am certain of it. You think about this. I just added this point in. I think it was just a couple of days ago. You can hire labor and services. You can hire that stuff out. You can hire somebody to work on your house. You can hire somebody to work on your car. You can hire somebody to educate your children, right? But you cannot hire out caring, right? You can pay somebody for labor, and you can tell them specifically what to do, and they can do it to a T, and you pay them. If they don't do it, you don't pay them. But it doesn't work that way with caring. You cannot pay somebody to care. Nobody's going to care about your kids like you do. For advanced subjects, you could use tutors, you could use YouTube, you could use other parents and homeschooling associations. There are other options out there. And there's great resources on the internet. Khan Math, is that what it is? Khan Academy? You can go there and you can get all your math questions answered there for free. There's all kinds of resources out there that can help you out. And of course, self-taught curricula remove your own limitations from the equation, because you don't need to know all the subjects your kids are learning about. Oh, the thing is, with the Robinson curriculum too, they don't teach spelling, they don't teach grammar, they don't teach a lot of things, because the kids learn all those things just from reading. I don't even think they really teach history per se, because there's a reading list, like thousands of books your kids are gonna read over the course of their education. And some of them are autobiographies or biographies. They're going to learn all the stuff that they need to learn just by reading all these books. And I know some kids that are in this program, and I'll tell you what. You don't think they know how to spell? Put them in a spelling bee. You don't think they know how to write? Well, the writing is one thing that they do all the time. I mean, if you wouldn't think that just by reading a lot you'd learn all that stuff, you're wrong. because I know some very well-educated little kids, some of them aren't that little, that have gone through this program, and they're very well-educated, and they know how to spell, and they know grammar, and they know history, and they know all kinds of stuff that I probably don't even know, because they've read probably 100 times more books than I've read, right? They're probably far more educated than I am. Anyway, objection number two, I don't know how to teach, right? I can imagine somebody would have that objection. You think, well, I'm not a teacher. I don't know how to teach. I'm not very good at teaching. I would say you do know how to teach because you've taught your kids everything that they know. By the time it's time to send them off to school, how much stuff do they know? All kinds of things, right? They know all kinds of things by the time they go to school, and you've taught them everything that they know. There are, you know, once again, the self-taught curricula. You can go that route. I've already said that about the Robinson curriculum. Once the kids learn how to read, then it's self-taught. So the only thing you teach them, you actively teach them in the Robinson curriculum, is how to read. Once they learn how to read, they teach themselves everything else. You can help them out once in a while, but for the most part, they learn themselves. The Ron Paul curriculum, as I've said, is self-taught. It's self-taught after the second grade, so the first two grades are not. It's video-based, so your children are learning from qualified teachers, if that's something that's important to you. It also gives children regular reading and writing assignments, so they're not learning solely through a computer screen. But this is the downside to it. The downside to the Ron Paul curriculum is it is video-based. It's internet-based, and most of their instruction is going to be in front of a screen with a teacher or professor lecturing them, if it was in person, it'd be a great thing, I think. But having him in front of a screen all the time, I don't think is the best idea. So that would be a consideration. But it is self-taught, and they are going to learn a whole ton of good stuff from it. But you would have to weigh that risk. As I've taught before, that being in front of a screen a lot can be harmful for children, especially kids in the third grade or fourth grade. I'm not sure that I would think that was a good idea. Maybe once they get older, maybe once they get to high school, that would be a great curriculum. I don't know, but it'd be something you could look into for yourself if you're interested. And the other downside of this is it could also teach them that the way to acquire information is by watching a video instead of reading. I mean, if they've gone 10, 12 years through a program that the way that I learn is sitting in front of a computer screen, then that's going to be their go-to way to learn something, probably. They're going to go to YouTube to learn everything instead of getting a book and reading it. So I don't think that would be a good idea. So I'm just giving you some of the disclaimers about the Ron Paul curriculum. And another disclaimer is, I mean, if you want your children to grow up as a socialist or a commie or something, you don't want to go to the Ron Paul curriculum, right? It's obviously a libertarian-based Austrian economics, free market, you know, that kind of thing. Okay, objection number three. I'm afraid that my children will not be socialized. I should have made this objection number one, because this is the number one objection against homeschooling. What about the socialization? They're not going to be socialized, they tell us. This is the biggest objection, the most common objection, and it's made by God-hating people with an agenda. This is the biggest BS objection ever. It's a lie. It's proven demonstrably false millions of times over again, and it's stupid. It makes no sense whatsoever. It's just parroted by people that have an agenda. Modern public cesspools only socialize your children with other children their age, or I should say with other devils their age. So there's your socialization, right? Who do you want to socialize your children with, right? I mean, yeah, they're going to get socialized in public school. That's true. I don't think it's a good thing. They're not going to get a good type of socialization anyway. The socialization in these public schools amounts to nothing more than your children being taught bad habits by other children. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33. 1 Corinthians 15:33. Be not deceived, evil communications corrupt good manners. Evil communication corrupts good manners. When your children or yourself spend a lot of time around evil people or evil children, their good manners are going to be corrupted. How many times, parents that have kids in public schools, how many times do your kids come home and you say, wow, that was, you really learned some good manners in school. I'm really liking the attitude that you're coming home with, and you're learning such wonderful things that are really improving your moral character. I don't think so. I mean, if I'm wrong, show me. You know, tell me about it. Oh, my kid comes home from public school, and I'm really impressed with the morality that they are learning there, where these other nice little proper children are rubbing off on them and teaching them such good things. I doubt it. And then, of course, there could be the objection, but I want my little cherub to go there and influence the rest of the little devils and make them all into better people. Right. That's going to work. Okay. So you want to consider the kind of socialization your children would receive in the public cesspools. Most homeschool children that I know are well socialized. They can communicate with older and younger children and adults alike. And they do so pretty well because they're not segregated with other children their age all day long. Look, I know no less than a dozen homeschool families, and probably more. I was just thinking about this morning, just counting on my fingers, and I can think of at least a dozen homeschool families I know, and I don't know a single one of them that have unsocialized children. I don't know any of them. The Quorum kids are homeschooled. Are they antisocial? Do they not know how to and interact and talk with people? And I mean, come on, think about it. It's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. It's a stupid objection. I got family members. I got two aunts and uncles that homeschooled their kids. Their kids are socialized. They do fine. I know lots of kids in other churches that have been homeschooled. That's a lie. But if you're concerned with socialization, then make sure your kids get social interaction. That's all. I mean, does the government have to provide everything for you? I mean, do they have to provide socialization for your kids? Can't you socialize them yourself if you're concerned about that, right? It's not a big deal. Take your kids out. Let them experience people. Encourage them to talk to other people at church, other kids at church. Encourage them to make friends with other children in church, or encourage them to make friends with neighborhood kids. And I think kids do need pushed out of their comfort zones. I remember when I was a kid, my mom, I wanted to call up the neighbor, which was a distant cousin of ours, and I wanted to see if I could hang out with my cousin, my friend. And my mom made me get on the phone. I don't know how old I was. I was probably maybe 6, 8, 10 years old. I don't remember exactly how old I was. But anyway, I was a younger kid, and she made me get on the phone and call down to the neighbor and ask if I could play with my neighbor friend. And I didn't want to do it, and it's uncomfortable and everything, but she made me get out of my comfort zone. And I think that is important. To do for your kids. I'm glad my mom did that for me. Okay, objection number 4. I'm afraid that my children will not receive as good of an education as their public school peers. Right? I can see somebody making this objection. After all, I'm not a teacher. What do I really know? What if I don't pick the best curriculum? What if I don't do the best job in teaching them? And I can just imagine, I haven't been there, but I can just imagine there's a lot of self-doubt. Has there ever been self-doubt? Have you ever had self-doubt about that? You know, wondering, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the right curriculum? Are they learning as much as they should be? Or are they going to get out when they're finally done? And then their peers that went to the public schools, are they going to be way ahead of them or something? I can imagine there'd be some self-doubt with that. But you know what? I think that self-doubt, it's good. I think it's humble to think like that. But I think it's unfounded. Our nation was built by people who were homeschooled. Did you realize that? Our nation was built by people that were homeschooled. I'm going to give you a couple of quotes here. The first one is from The History of Homeschooling in America. It's from www.sharefaith.com. It says, the effectiveness of homeschooling was not in question during the 18th and 19th centuries, so 17 and 1800s. Some of the most well-known writers and inventors were homeschooled. Thomas Edison, who attended only 3 months of elementary school, was taught by his mother. Anybody think Thomas Edison was a dummy, didn't know anything? He invented the light bulb, right? That was Edison, right? Yeah, okay, good. See, I know a little bit of history. Even though I went to public school, I do know a little bit of history. Thomas Edison, yeah, he was only 3 months in an elementary school. I doubt he learned how to make the light bulb in that 3 months. I bet you some of the things his mother taught him may have instilled in him an inquisitive mind to go out there and learn other things. Other famous homeschoolers include a guy named Benjamin Franklin. Anybody ever heard of him? Homeschooled. John Wesley. Anybody ever heard of him? He's the guy that founded Methodism, Methodist Church. Not a stupid man. Bad doctrine, but not a stupid man, obviously. Beatrice Potter. I must admit, I don't know who she is. Does anybody know who? She's famous. You know who she is, apparently?
An author.
Okay. Well, she was homeschooled. Charles Dickens, another famous author, homeschooled. Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone, homeschooled. Imagine that. Maybe he would have invented the cell phone if he would have gone to a government school. I don't know. But he invented the telephone nevertheless. That's not a small feat, right? Test results and college entrance exams have shown that homeschooled kids statistically do far better than public schooled kids. Now, you wouldn't think that that's true. You wouldn't think that homeschooled kids would do better on tests and college entrance exams than their public schooled peers, or even private schooled peers. You wouldn't think that. But here's a quote for you. This is from an article called "Do Homeschool Kids Really Rate Better on Standardized Tests?" This is from wehavekids.com. Homeschooled students score about 72 points higher than the national average on the Scholastic Aptitude Test, the SAT. The average American college test, which is the ACT, score is 21. The average score for homeschoolers is 22.8 out of a possible 36 points. Homeschoolers are at the 77th percentile on the Iowa test of basic skills. So they outdo their other peers, whether they are public or private schooled. Not by a landslide. It's not like, you know, they're doing 1,600 on their SATs or something and everybody else is way below, but they are above the average. So that's... you got nothing to worry about. And that's the average home. That's not the best of the best of the homeschooled kids. That's the average homeschooled kid does better than the average public schooled kid. So chances are, if you homeschool your kid, they are going to do at least as good or better than they would in a public school setting. And that's just simply their education. That's the things that they're learning, not to mention the moral aspect of it is a whole other story. And get this, homeschoolers spend far less time in school and consistently outperform their peers who spend much more time in the asylum. You think about it. Not only do homeschooled kids do better on the exams, on the ACT and the SAT and the test of skills, but they spend a fraction of the amount of time in school. Homeschool kids that I know spend, 4 or 5 hours, probably max, in school. So they spend less time there. They learn less garbage. They have their minds less polluted. And they do better on the testing. So I'm not saying you got to homeschool, but your reasons for not doing it, at least, you shouldn't have any, these shouldn't be the reasons anyway. You might have other reasons that are valid, but the education quality would not be a reason. And objection number 5, this is the last objection. I don't have the time because I have to work. And then that can be a legitimate objection that people have. But I would say you want to prioritize your children and cut back on your standard of living so that you can live on your husband's income. So then you could do it if you wanted to. That it would just be a matter of making the hard decisions to do it. If you desire to homeschool, then you want a purpose in your heart that you will do so, and then just beg God for help that you can provide for your family with one income. So that's if you want to do it. If you want to do it, then you just got to, you know, just tell the Lord, this is what I want to do, and I will do whatever I have to do in my life to get things arranged so that we can live on one income. But it would be a matter of if you want to do it or not. The battle is for the mind, and therefore prioritizing the development of the mind is critically important. And it might require some sacrifice. That's true. It must be carefully considered for each family. It may not be possible in some circumstances, in some cases, but I would say it should be considered. Every family should consider it. And it may not turn out to be for you, but I would think you'd do a disservice to just cast it away without even giving it any due consideration. You don't want to default to the world's ways without carefully considering the costs. You remember what Jesus said, that no man would go up against another, no army with 10,000, with one, was it 1,000, would go up an army against 10,000 without considering the cost. No man would start to build a tower without considering the cost, first of all. Well, it's the same way here. You wouldn't want to just default to the world's ways without considering the costs. You will be paying for that fancy job or that second income. It's going to cost you. You just got to ask you, is it worth the cost or not? Because it will cost you something. And you just want to consider whether it's worth it. Because some of the things, the decisions that you make now, you're not going to reap the benefits or the detriments of them for a long time. Look at Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 1. Cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Especially a decision like schooling your children, educating your children, you're not, the benefits or the detriments are not going to come for a long time. And once they come, then it's too late, right? So you want to consider it now while you still can. Now let's get to the second education option, and that is government or private schools. Right, these are the second and third. Now, like I said, it's not imperative to homeschool. You don't have to homeschool. Parents do have the option to delegate this task of educating their children to others. But the responsibility of the children's education still rests on the parents. So just remember that. Parents have the ability to delegate, but you can't delegate the responsibility. The responsibility is yours, right? The carrying it out, you can delegate. Paul was a good example of somebody who his education was delegated to somebody else, right? And Paul had a good education. He was brought up at the feet of Gamaliel. Let's look at Acts 22 and verse 3. Acts 22 and verse 3. So I'm not saying at all that it would be a bad thing to delegate the education of your children to somebody else. That could be just fine. Paul had a good education, although the Phariseeism that he learned, of course, was not good. So in Paul's case, Paul's parents should have been unteaching probably some of the Phariseeism that Gamaliel taught him in that case. But he did receive quite the education from a prestigious man. In Acts 22 and verse 3, Paul said, I am verily a man which am a Jew, born in Tarsus, a city in Cilicia, yet brought up in this city at the feet of Gamaliel, and taught according to the perfect manner of the law of the fathers, and was zealous toward God, as ye all are this day. He said he was brought up. To bring up means to bring into a higher position, to elevate, raise, rear, build up, to raise to a point or amount, to rear from childhood, to educate, breed. In other words, Paul was saying that he was educated at the feet of Gamaliel, which was a famous scholar and teacher among the Jews in those days. So in other words, he was raised or he was educated from childhood by somebody other than his parents. And there's nothing wrong with that per se. Another man in the Bible that likewise was educated by somebody else was Samuel. His mother promised to give Samuel to the Lord, and she gave him to Eli, and Eli brought him up and educated him in 1 Samuel 1, 24 through 28. 1 Samuel 1, 24 through 28. This is speaking of Hannah, Samuel's mother. And when she had weaned him, she took him up with her, with three bullocks and one ephah of flour and a bottle of wine, and brought him unto the house of the Lord in Shiloh, and the child was young. And they slew a bullock and brought the child to Eli, and she said, O my Lord, as thy soul liveth, my Lord, I am the woman that stood there, that stood by thee here praying unto the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord hath given me my petition, which I asked of him. Therefore also I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he liveth, he shall be lent to the Lord. And he worshipped the Lord there. So Samuel was lent unto the Lord, and in that case he was lent unto the Lord's priest, Eli, and Eli brought him up and educated him. Paul used the example, the illustration of a child being under tutors and governors at the behest of his father to describe how the church was brought up under the law of Moses until the time that it grew up. Let's look in Galatians 4, 1 through 2. So Paul uses the example of the law to show, or he uses the example of a child educated by somebody else to show how God's people were brought up under the law until they came to full age. Galatians 4 and verses 1 through 2. Galatians 4, 1 through 2. Now I say that the heir, as long as he is a child, differeth nothing from a servant, though he be lord of all, but is under tutors and governors until the time appointed of the father. So Paul is just using it as a given that there's nothing wrong with a father giving his child to a tutor or a governor to be trained and educated, to be brought up, until the time that the father appoints he's done with that. So the point is that as a father, you can delegate the education of your children to somebody else. Public school, private school, personal tutor, whatever you want to do. Now, delegating your children's education to another may be a necessary alternative to doing it yourself. If you choose this option, like a public school or private school or a homeschool association even, because there are associations of homeschoolers and sometimes they do send the kids to in a group meeting once a week and there is an instructor there that teaches the children there. I know of homeschooling parents that do that as well. But if you do that, just remember that the responsibility of ensuring that your child gets a good education is still yours. It's not like you make the decision to send them to a public school and then just say, okay, now it's on them. It's up to them to make sure that my child gets a proper education. No, it's up to you. It's still up to you. The buck stops with you. It is your responsibility to make sure that your kid gets a good education. And remember, when I defined education last time, when I say education, I don't just mean all the bookwork that they do in school. I mean the preparing and training of them to be a good, productive person, right? So there's a lot more to education than just sending them to a school to be taught book things, right? There's a lot of things that they need to learn during their formative years, and that responsibility is yours. Now let's just briefly look at government or public schools. See, the public schools is a euphemism again. It sounds better than government schools, right? If you say, I send my kid to a government school, there's a negative connotation there because the government, can they do anything right? I don't know. I can't really think of anything offhand that they have really done a bang-up job of. You could say the military, but my goodness, if you have to spend 10 times as much as like pretty much the rest of the world combined on your military, something might be a little bit amiss there, I would say. Or maybe not 10 times, as much as the 10 next biggest countries in the world. If you have to spend that much on your military, chances are maybe you're doing something wrong because you probably don't need to waste that much money on it. But anyway, I can't think of anything that the government really does well. They do well at extracting money from us. Yes, they do. You forget to pay a parking ticket, let me tell you what, you're going to be in big trouble. But if you murder somebody, most of those go unsolved. But yeah, if you forget to pay, they will make sure that that money gets to them one way or the other. Anyway. Okay, so the public schools. This is the cheapest solution because it's, quote, free, right? So that is a benefit. I will give them their due. It is, quote, free. Now, of course, you pay for it. But if you do another method of schooling, you pay twice. You pay for the public education that your kid doesn't get, right, through your property taxes, and then you pay for the private school or the homeschooling curriculum in addition to that. So you pay twice. So it's cheaper. It is. But remember the old saying, you get what you pay for. So you want to consider that as well. It has been claimed that some government schools give a quality education. And I'm not going to say that this is not true. I would have to examine the evidence, but it has been claimed that that kids come out of public schools with a good quality education, and that could be the case. But even if it is true, you just want to be aware that they're going to be indoctrinated with a plethora of propaganda and lies. Even if they come out with really good math skills, really good science skills, really good reading comprehension, you know, they've got a good intellectual education, just know that they've been taught a whole bunch of junk too that you're going to have to make sure and unteach. You would do well to investigate the school that they're attending, to get to know their teachers, and regularly review their textbooks and homework to ensure that the material is high quality and that it's free of moral filth. I would say if your kids are going to a school, public or private, as a parent, you should know their teachers, all of their teachers, how many ever that they have based on whatever grade they're in. Because you think about it, you are giving your child to this teacher. For when they're young, they're only with one teacher. So they're giving your child to one teacher to be there influenced by that person by, what, 7 hours a day? That teacher has more time to influence your child than you do. Think about that. So you should know your teacher, your students' teachers. I would highly, highly recommend that. Know what kind of a person that is and know what kind of stuff that your child is going to be exposed to. Especially nowadays, because people are just crazier and crazier. It's not like the old days where you send them to school, probably even when I went to school, and most of the teachers, it was a small town, and they're mostly probably just decent folks, right? They may not exactly have all of your ideals, but they're decent people, right? It's not some lesbian living with her wife that has three kids that they each were artificially inseminated with or something, right? There weren't crazy people back then anyway. And here's a thought I just had, and I should say this too. It is a physical danger to send your kids to public schools nowadays too. It's not like, you know, they have a 15% chance of being killed or something, but there are school shootings these days. If the school shootings are actually real, I don't even know. Who knows? I'm not even going to say. Anyway, do some research. You might find out that there are some strange things about some of these school shootings that... The good thing is, maybe nobody actually dies, so that's a good thing. But anyway, I don't know about this latest one. I haven't done much research into it, except I did just go search on YouTube. Anytime one of these things happens, I just type in the name of the school, false flag or hoax, because I'm just curious what people are saying. And it's interesting. Whenever you just pay attention to the initial news reports, and you can find it. Just go out on YouTube, although YouTube has now censored everything. And if you type in whatever the name of that place was, Parkway or whatever it was called down in Florida, if you type that in and you type in hoax or false flag, the first dozen videos are going to be CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, blah, blah, blah. It's going to be all the officially approved opinion. You won't even find what you're searching for until you go way down. It used to be in the old days, like a year ago, when you typed that in, or if you even typed in the school shooting, all you would find are the viral videos about how they're a hoax or a false flag, and YouTube totally redid their algorithm, so it's hard to even find that stuff anymore. But anyway, I watched a video of an interview with one of the students that was in the school, and she's saying that there was two or three shooters in that school. And this is not a conspiracy theorist after the fact. This is a woman being interviewed that very moment, right after the shooting, that same day, saying that there were multiple shooters in the school. Well, that doesn't fit the narrative, does it? And do you know, they were running, I don't know if it was the FBI, but they were running a drill in that school that very day of an active shooter. Do you know, this is what they do. You know, with 9/11, they were running a drill the very day about planes being hijacked and flown into buildings. The very day, right? This is what they do. Same thing in Sandy Hook. You know, the shooting in Connecticut a while back? They were running drills. I don't know if it was that day, but it was within very, very close to the time of that shooting, they were running drills. And in this school in Florida, they were running drills. And whenever shots were going off, students, according to what I read anyway, didn't even know. A lot of them, I think, thought that it was part of the drill. What are the coincidences of that? That the police force just happens to be doing an active shooter drill in the school, and some crazy kid whom the FBI already knew was a nut job and had been reported to the FBI ahead of time, and he just goes there and shoots the place up. What are the odds of that? So, I don't know. I don't know what happened there. Hopefully nobody got killed, but I have no idea. But the point is, it is a dangerous place. When you send your kids to a no-gun zone, a gun-free zone, you're taking their lives into your hands. That's where all the school shootings are, gun-free zones. I don't know why those stupid signs don't work. I mean, you know, why when the guy shows up with the AR-15, doesn't he see the sign and turn around and go somewhere else? I don't know, they're not effective. Maybe they need to make the sign bigger. Maybe the perpetrator didn't see the sign that said he couldn't carry the gun into the place. That might have been the problem. Be ready to counter-teach your children if they're attending public schools, as they will be taught lies such as evolution, acceptance of a sodomitical lifestyle, transgenderism, abortion, government propaganda, false doctrine in general. I was recently in a high school, and I read the sign on the front door, and I will read it to you. It said, "This school welcomes students of all races, ethnicities, and nationalities." That's okay. "Students with diverse abilities." I don't know what that means, but that's okay, right? "Students who are LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender." This is a sign on a high school here in Minneapolis. Every student that walks into those doors reads this sign that, oh, students who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender are welcomed here. You know what they're doing? They are encouraging students to be those things. They're saying, it's okay. You can be a sodomite and come to this school. We will welcome you with open arms. That is wicked. You are suggesting things to kids who are probably very confused in this crazy culture that we live in and telling them, it's okay, you can be a sodomite and come here. "Students of all family structures." You got to read between the lines. What does that mean? Two moms, two dads, three dads, who knows what? "Students of all family structures." "Students who are English language learners." "Students of all religions." They're all created equal, you know. "Students of all socioeconomic backgrounds." "Students of all body types." You. That's what they say. So, all body types. I don't know what that means. Big, small. I don't know what that means exactly and why that is even necessary to have on a sign in the front of the school. I mean, why even draw attention? Why draw a student's attention to their body type? And make them realize that, oh, maybe there are people that don't like my body type. After all, if there's not something wrong with my body type, why is there a sign here telling me that it's okay, you can be this body type? You know, if you go and there's a sign there that says it's okay, you can be these things, you know what they're telling you? Well, there are certain people that don't think it's okay, so we want to put a sign here to tell you. You're drawing attention. I mean, it's stupid. It's counterproductive anyway, and it's wicked. "If you entrust your child's education to a public school with no oversight on your part," and this is the key, "with no oversight on your part, don't be surprised that they come out spiritually, morally, mentally, intellectually, socially, and emotionally damaged." Now, I'm not saying if you send your kid to a public school, they're going to come out that way. Get what I say. If you send them to a public school with no oversight on your part, don't be surprised if they come out damaged in one way or multiple ways. Then we have private schools. Now, private schools, it seems like a good idea, right? If you could afford it, that's one of the major problems. They're often run by Christian organizations. And that sounds good, right? I'd send my kid to a Christian school. But you know the problem with the Christian school, right? Is that the Christians that are running it probably don't believe the same way that you do, right? And so the kids are going to be taught, quote, Christian things that are not what you probably want them to be taught. A lot of times I know kids that went to a Christian school and they were made to memorize scripture. Great thing, right? You know what the problem was? New King James. So here are your poor kids. You're teaching the King James at home and they've got to memorize the New King James at school, and then you somehow have to try to get them to re-memorize the verse in the right version, but then if they quote them the King James, they probably aren't going to get checked off that they got the verse right. So that would be horrible. To me, I think I'd rather send them to a public school than if they had to memorize the New King James. I'd rather send them to a public school. That would just drive me up the wall, I think. But I don't know. Maybe you weigh the options and the public school is just so bad, you just make sure you make them memorize the same verses in the King James afterwards. I suppose you could do that too. But, so they will be Christian, and you won't probably have to worry about your child's mind being polluted with a bunch of moral filth like you would in the public cesspools. So at least moral filth, they're probably going to be good. There's not going to be a sign on the door that says LGBT welcome here or something. So that's good, right? That's good. But if they're religious schools, they're going to be indoctrinating your children with spiritual filth. And you're going to have to unteach that to your kids. So if the school is Arminian, your kids are going to be taught Arminianism. Or if it's Lutheran, they're going to be taught Lutheranism. Or if it's Catholic, they're going to be taught Catholicism. Or you name it, whatever. They're going to be taught something that you are not going to agree with. And then a big reason why probably most people don't go the private school route, even though they wish they could, is the money, right? It's very, very expensive. and prohibitively expensive for most families. I was just blown away by the cost of private schools, like $10,000 a year or $5,000 or 28. Oh, 18. Oh, yeah. I mean, so thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. If you can do it, fine. But boy, that's out of the range of most people, right? So that's what happens there. I mean, they're more expensive than college in a lot of cases. Anyway, it could be worth it. I mean, it just depends, I guess. If it's a good school and if you got the money, you got lots of go ahead. I mean, it's not a bad option. It's just not possible for a lot of people. Now, one entity that you must be very careful delegating your child's education to is the TV, right? That's a lot of parents end up delegating the old TV to be their student's teacher, and that's not a good idea. The TV will teach your children much, but most of it will not be good. Let's consider Psalm 101 and verse 3. Psalm 101 and verse 3, this is why I chose this verse at the outset. Psalm 101 and verse 3. Psalm 101:3, I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. You want to think about that every time you set your kid in front of the TV to be their babysitter or their school teacher. You're set, especially if it's TV programming, you're setting wicked things before their eyes. There's a lot of garbage that goes on those TVs. You want to be careful about that. Same thing's true with the internet, of course. I mean, you can get some really, really heinous stuff on the internet. And if you give your kid a little screen in his or her pocket and let them go off to their bedroom by themselves, especially if they're a boy, don't be shocked when they're looking at pornography like, oh, I can't believe my perfect little angel would do something like that. Ask yourself, what would you have done when you were his age and your parents gave you your own screen in your pocket to go off in your bedroom with? I can tell you what I would have done. I know what I did. And I didn't even have a little screen. I had to use the dial-up internet with the, all the loud, and then it would go offline, and it would come back on, and hopefully my parents didn't hear it or whatever. And yeah. Yeah, I know. Oh, but not my child. He wouldn't do that. Right, okay. You are delusional, I would say. 1 Corinthians 15:33, be not deceived, evil communication corrupts good manners. TV will also teach them to have short attention spans and to not appreciate reading and real learning. Right? You can learn some things from the TV, it's true. There are educational programs on there, but they pale in comparison to actually getting out a book and reading that. And what happens with the TV then is, and this has been shown scientifically as far as I know, that it shortens the attention span. All the flashing images and switching from one thing to the other really quickly like that. That's why people today have the attention span of a gnat, right? That's why when you read news articles typically, if it takes more than about 3 minutes to read, most people aren't going to read it. That's why the news articles are very, very short these days. And now you're going to Twitter with, 140 characters or something to get your point across. And I'm sure as attention spans devolve, Twitter will probably shorten it down to 100 characters because 140 characters is just, that is too much information to be able to process at one time. You know, when you start talking about sentences, that's too much. I need like 3 words or so, just word bites because, that's just, I don't have that kind of time. Who's got the kind of time to read 140 characters? I mean, come on, really. Now, if you use the TV as a babysitter, be prepared to face the consequences. Using the TV as a babysitter, I got this point from somebody else. Using the TV as a babysitter backfires because the child then craves constant entertainment and they don't learn to entertain themselves. And when this person told me this, I thought, yes, that's exactly right. If you use the TV as a babysitter, the child is going to expect to be entertained constantly. If you tell him, go play, go read, go get out of my hair and be quiet and don't give him a TV as a babysitter, then he's not going to be expected to be entertained all the time. Consequently, then, they're in your hair or on your heels all the time, wanting you to provide amusement or attention for them. These are not my words, they're somebody else's words, which I thought were wise. Lots of TV will handicap you in educating your child because it will decrease their attention span and their interest in reading and books. I'm kind of surprised that kids nowadays want to read at all, because who wants to read when you got iPhones and iPads and all this, you know, neat videos on the internet? Who wants to read anymore? I'm surprised anybody wants to do it. Video game playing and internet usage, of course, is similar. It's not just watching the TV. Watching TV is even worse for kids now than it was whenever we were kids because of the speed of the pictures flashing on the TV screen. I don't really watch TV anymore. I haven't watched it for years, many, like 13 years or something like that. But I've been told, anyway, these new kids' movies are just super flashy and really crazy. I don't know. So I forget, what was the name of the movie? There was a movie, I'm sure you've heard about it. I don't remember. I didn't see it. But anyway, I was told that that one was exceptionally bad. And this is by a parent that doesn't watch very much TV, so maybe she was more attuned to it than some are. But anyway, if parents don't let their kids watch TV, but they watch a lot of it themselves, they're still teaching their kids that this is the way to relax. So it's kind of like, if you're not going to let your kids watch TV, then you probably shouldn't be watching very much yourself, because if you say you can't watch TV, but this is what I do to relax, well, then you're kind of, you know, making a double standard there, I would think. I have been told that a book called Amusing Ourselves to Death by Neil Postman is a great book on this topic. And I have not read it myself, so I can't vouch for it, but I have been told by people that have read it themselves that this is an excellent book, which is something that I want to read. And I just have one more point, and then we'll finish up for today. And that is, don't limit your children's education to school time, right? It's not like they go there to school and they get their 7 hours and that's their education. I kind of like the old saying that whenever school is over, education can begin. And that's, I don't, have I got a witness? I mean, I got a witness, right? Did I learn anything in high school? I don't know. I can't remember. Maybe I learned something. I'm sure I learned something. I don't know. But did I learn it? Did I learn anything there that I wouldn't have learned just, you know, in life? I don't know. I can't think of much. But anyway, my real education started after I got out of school. That's whenever I really wanted to learn things and wanted to read books and wanted to look into things. And so anyway, don't let school time be the only time that they get education. You want to heed the principle of Deuteronomy 6, 6 through 7. Deuteronomy 6, 6 through 7. We looked at this before. I think it was last Sunday, and I will read it to you again because this is important. Deuteronomy 6, 6 through 7 says, "And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine house, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes. And thou shalt write them upon the posts of thy house and on thy gates." So the things of God were to be talked about all the time. When you get up, when you go to bed, when you're walking by the way, when you're sitting in the house. So you don't want education to just be limited to the time that they're in school. You can use situations in life to teach them. And that's a great way to teach your kids. Just whenever situations happen, make it a moment of education and use that as an opportunity to teach them whatever the situation was. You can point out things as you're driving and explain to them how they work or how they're done. Because remember what he said, you know, by the way, when you're teaching to your children, by the way. So when you're driving down the road and you see a farm or you see a tractor or a farmer, there's an educational opportunity. You can explain what farming is and how the farmer sows the seed at a certain time of year and how it grows and why it grows and how he harvests it and then what he does with it after he harvests it. And if you don't know, well, then go figure it out. You know, go read about it and then you can teach your kids about it. Or construction. You know, I'm fascinated by the invisible hand of the free market and how all these things are made. And whenever I drive down the road, I'm just looking at stuff and I just think, wow, this is amazing. Everything that I see here came out of the earth. You ever think about that? Drive through Minneapolis, all the buildings you see, everything you see, you know what? Some dude digged in the ground and dug things up and refined them and built all that stuff. Or else he chopped down trees, which came out of the earth. Everything comes out of the earth. It's really quite amazing. So when you see construction, there's a teaching opportunity, if you know anything about that. Or advertising. You know, you see the billboards, and I hate looking at them too, but you know what? Your kids are going to see them. Use it as a teaching opportunity. Explain to them what advertising is, how it works, how effective it is, how you want to be careful that you're not deceived by it. There's all kinds of things that you can teach your kids just driving down the road, driving to church. That can be a schooling experience just driving to church. Or cars. Explain to them if you know how a car works, how a motor works, how, you know, all kinds of things that you can teach your kids just as you're driving along. Teach your children to appreciate the wonder of the free market with its spontaneous order that produces all of the products that we use every day. It is fascinating. You can take just something as simple as a pencil. I would recommend that you read the little essay called iPencil by Leonard Reed, I'm pretty sure, wrote it. It's called iPencil. You can find it for free on the internet. It's a short little thing. And he goes, this is a long time ago he wrote this, back whenever people still used the wooden graphite pencils. You remember those? You older people remember the old wooden pencils? Do they still have wooden pencils today?
Yes. Right.
They do. Okay. Well, so anyway, so a wooden pencil. You think, well, that's simple. Who doesn't know how a wooden pencil would, I could probably make a wooden pencil in, you know, no time, right? It's a simple thing. I am here to tell you that there is not one single person on the face of this planet, all 7 billion people, there's not one single person on this planet that knows how to make a wooden pencil. I guarantee you. There is not one person that if you just sent him out into the woods could make a pencil. Because you know what it takes to make a pencil? It takes wood. You know what you got to do to get the wood? You need a chainsaw. You got to chop down the tree. And then you got to put it through a mill. Well, who makes the chainsaw? Well, you got a metal. Where do you get the metal? You got to mine it out of the ground. How do you do that? Well, you got to have a machine that digs down into the ground, and then you got to have a truck to transport it. What's the truck need? Tires, gasoline. Where do you get the gasoline? You got to go dig down into the ground for the gasoline. You know how to mine out oil. You know how to mine out iron ore. You know how to refine that. You know how to make steel. Well, that's just to get the chainsaw to cut down the tree for the lumber. Then what about the graphite? Do you even know where graphite's found? Probably not. It's off somewhere, out in some foreign country. I forget where it's found. You got to go mine out the graphite. What do you got to do for that? Same thing you had to do to make the chainsaw, right? All those processes. Then you got the rubber. You got to go to find a rubber tree out there in the Amazon somewhere or something. You got to chop that thing down. You got to figure out how to refine that. Most of you couldn't even find a rubber tree, let alone even know what a rubber tree is, let alone make rubber out of it. Then you got to make the little metal cap on the end of the pencil. How you got to do that? You got to go mine some iron ore. How do you do that, right? None of you know how to do any of that. Nobody knows how to do any of that. There are people out there that know every little part of that process, right? There's somebody out there, but no one person knows any of it. And then you got to paint the pencil. You got to get the chemicals and the oils and whatever else that go into making the paint. And how do you get those? And on and on and on. There is not one person on this entire planet that knows how to make a pencil. And that's one of the simplest devices that any of us use. Nobody knows how to make a pencil. How does this happen? It happens because of the spontaneous order of the market, what Adam Smith called the invisible hand. I would encourage you to teach your children the wonder of the free market, because there is no way that some dude with a bullhorn could have determined 1,000 years ago, we're going to create this thing called a pencil, and you're going to do this, you're going to do that, you're going to do that. It would have never happened. A pencil would have never happened without the free market, without voluntary exchanges. And the guy out there that's in the Amazon chopping down the rubber tree, does he know that it's going for a pencil? Probably not. Is he ever going to see the pencil that's being made? No. The lumberjack that's cutting down the wood for the pencil, does he know he's cutting it down for the pencil? No. The guy that's mining the iron ore for the little metal end on the pencil? None of those people know. They don't know each other. They don't even know each other exists. They don't even know what they're doing, what the final product that they're making is. And all of these things get organized because of the price system. It's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. And if you're not fascinated by that, then we're just not fascinated by the same things, I guess, because that is just absolutely remarkable to me. So when I learned all that kind of stuff, going to Walmart is a totally new experience. You go there and you just look at all this stuff and you just think, this is a miracle. This is amazing. I go to the grocery store and literally I think, this is a miracle. All of this food from all of these different places somehow just happens to be here. And when I want to buy one thing, it just happens to be here. But you know, it happened to be here because of thousands of people making all these individual decisions because there was some profit in it for them that if they passed it on down the line, they make a profit. And somehow all that food that I need is there, and I never ordered it ahead of time. I never asked for it. They didn't even know I was coming in, but they have the stock shelved for me, or the shelves stocked for me. It's fascinating. Teach your kids that. And teach them that the government or any organized body could have never produced any of that stuff without just letting people freely associate together and make all the things that we see today. So that's just one other way that you can educate your children. And next time, Lord willing, we will pick up and finish this study, Lord willing. Thank you for your kind and patient attention.